Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
No one is safe from criminals. They strike when and where they please, whether it at home or in the workplace. Today is a case that coined the term thrill kill, and it occurred when two young men targeted an innocent pizza delivery driver while he was working, all because he was an easy target. This is The Pizza Killers. My name's Ben.
And I'm Nicole, and you're listening to Wicked and Grim,
a true crime podcast.
Warning, the following podcast contains graphic content and material intended for a mature audience. Listener discretion is advised.
We just recorded a pre-show and we already kind of want to order pizza because of this episode.
Do we though?
I mean, not really, but just we were talking about pizza a little bit and then we're like, it's kind of tempting.
Pizza is a damn good food.
There is no bad time for pizza. I mean, yeah. I mean, they're, if you really search technically, I'm sure you could find a bad time for pizza. Like if you're ordering delivery at someone's wake or something, yeah, it's probably a bad time for pizza. But outside of the extreme, there is no bad time for pizza.
No, but maybe while you're listening to this episode. Possibly.
Well, that is yet to be determined.
Okay.
But we'll find that out. But before we even find that out, we got some stuff to talk about.
What do we got to talk about?
First and foremost, we got to talk about the awesome people who signed up over on Patreon. So we have Maggie Mock, Stephanie Smith, and Alyssa Freeword. Thank you very much.
Nice.
Signing up over on Patreon gets you that behind the scenes access, the good old extra episodes, which we have quite a library built up now. Mm-hmm. Just a whole bunch of good stuff. So you can go over and support us there. You can just continue listening here. That's cool too. We appreciate you either way.
Yeah.
But if you're curious, link is below. Yeah.
There you go.
There we go.
There we go.
Do we have anything really that we need to talk about right now?
I don't know. We just chatted about a shit ton of stuff on our pre-show.
We did. So. We talked about how our chickens are a shit show right now.
An absolute shit show.
We have one who is a little bit sick right now. We have the little chicks that we got a little while ago that are finally being introduced to the flock. They're not like in the flock yet, but they have like their whole like separate little run right now. And it all looks super redneck because when we first built a coop, we didn't know what we were doing. And then it's just like adding on more and more things.
These poor chickens, I feel like we just, you know, they're just, we're learning from them.
But thankfully, we are building a new proper chicken coop with a new proper chicken run, like all this good stuff. Mm-hmm. Don't get me wrong. Like they have it good now.
They do. I feel like we'd spend a lot of time and I'm cleaning in there often and like they do got it good.
Yeah. It's just like recycled materials, like using what we have and super redneck. There's nothing wrong with redneck. Trust me, we kind of are redneck, but it's just, you know, that whole vibe.
But the thing is, I don't think they care.
No, they don't. The chickens are doing good and that's what's important.
Totally.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I am very intrigued about this one.
You
want to just dive right in here, but do you got other things you got to chit chat about?
I think we're good, but I am curious. What about it has you so intrigued?
I'm terrified because I've always been, I don't know, a person that thinks certain jobs out there are like kind of dangerous. And not even because, you know, if you're like a police officer or something, like, of course, that job's dangerous. Yeah. Right. But then there's other jobs like a delivery person, or I think I've said like a realtor, or just like certain things where you put yourself in situations that could end up being harmful.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right.
And so, yeah, this is going to be hard for me.
Fair enough. Fair enough. It's certainly, there is risk to certain employment, I guess, to mm-hmm. certain avenues of careers. And that risk is different. For example, if you look at like a welder, you're going to have a risk of arc flash, for burning yourself, for dropping steel plates on your toes and squishing your fingers. However, if you're working in an office, you're more apt to have higher risk for back problems, sitting in a chair, carpal tunnel syndrome.
Yeah.
And like you say, when you're putting yourself out in the public, like a realtor, you're putting yourself at risk to the public mm-hmm. for someone that you might be conducting business with, that, hey, they don't have a background check or anything. You're just meeting some random person. Yeah. That right there is a risk.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the very same risk that we are going to be going over today in this case.
Oh, boy. Okay. I already feel like antsy.
You good?
Yeah.
You sure?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think so.
Okay. Well, let's dive into the pizza killers. Also known as the baby face pizza killers. I heard it mentioned as that online a couple times too.
Yeah. Interesting.
And you'll understand why in a while. Okay. So the pizza murders began its tragic events actually long before the actual murders ever took place, and instead went back to a burglary at Adventure Sports, which was an outdoor store nestled in Franklin a mere 11 days prior. Adventure Sports was a haven for hunting, fishing, and camping enthusiasts. Held stock of camping gear, hiking equipment, fishing poles, lures, baits, camouflage, and of course, guns and ammunition. On April 8th, 1997, Adventure Sports was a place that proved to be a tantalizing target for Thomas Koskovich, who was 18 years old, and his accomplice, Michael Conklin, 19 years old. Hence, the baby face, because we have some young individuals who are our perpetrators.
At first I was like, okay, well, they're just really young. But then I'm like, well, maybe they're wearing masks or something that have like a baby face.
Something from the Halloween store, maybe.
I don't know.
No, that's a legitimate point. That could be, but that's unfortunately, well, I mean, there is no fortunately or unfortunately, but it's just not the scenario.
Not the case.
Not the case, yeah. Now, Michael, who, as I said, was 19, he was waiting in the vehicle to be the getaway for Thomas while he was inside. So while it was never really specified what exactly it was, Thomas exploited an alleged flaw in the store's alarm system and used it to his advantage. This allowed him much more time to not only break into the store, but ensure it didn't have like any sort of rush on how long he spent in there, which allowed him the opportunity to steal exactly what he wanted. So while inside, Thomas seized three firearms, a .22 caliber revolver, a .45 caliber semi-automatic pistol, and another .40 caliber semi-automatic pistol. Along with it, he also ensured that he had the ammunition that he needed to go with them all. While it's always concerning to hear when firearms are stolen, in this case, no one could have known that these pilfered weapons would soon become instruments of tragedy, as these two young men would use them to commit a cold-blooded murder, staining the community in crimson.
Was this guy smarter than normal, or like average? More average?
Not that I'm aware of, no.
I can't even speak. Just the fact that he could get through the like alarm or whatever, right? Or prolong it from going off seems.
No, I don't know if there's anything specific that he, any intelligence benefits, or I don't know how to point it out. I don't know if he's very smart or not. I mean, considering the outcome of this and what he did, I don't think he's very bright, but there was just something that he knew about the system that he took advantage of.
Mm-hmm.
How he knew it, what that was, I could not find.
Okay.
Yeah. Now, the initial idea, though, for this was not to kill anyone with these firearms. The plan instead was to trade the stolen items for cocaine, then peddle that cocaine for a profit. This way, in their theory, they would make more money than if they were to just sell the stolen guns.
What the shit? Okay.
I'm assuming it might potentially be easier to sell cocaine
than the guns.
Yeah, I'm not too sure their logic there, mm-hmm. but that was their plan. So does he sound very smart now?
No. He sounds like a fucking idiot. Am I allowed to say that?
Yeah, fair enough. Okay. I'm not disagreeing with you. So Now, the plan, though, however, did take a turn when Thomas mentioned the subject of actually killing someone, a proposition that repulsed Michael at first, who immediately disliked the idea and the brutal intentions behind it. Thomas continued on saying how they could kill a pizza delivery driver and how easy it would be. Michael immediately began questioning him on this and his rationale behind killing someone and targeting a pizza delivery driver, to which Thomas responded, quote, "They're easy targets. I just want to kill someone just for the thrill of it."
Good God. Gosh.
Yeah, what a piece of shit.
Okay, and are they actually easy targets?
Well, in the fact that it's like, yeah, come to my house, and then it's like, it could just be random, you know?
Yeah, I guess technically, because I'm just thinking like they're always outside of the door, but I mean, you could quite easily be outside hiding or doing something. Gosh, yeah. That's terrible. And it's usually like young people and who are pizza delivery drivers, right?
Yep.
Oh, I hate this.
Yeah, it's not cool.
That's so fucked.
Now, fast forward to April 19th of 1997. Thomas concealed the stolen 45 caliber semi-automatic pistol beneath his shirt, while Jason, another friend, concealed the 22 caliber revolver. At this point, Michael had nothing to do with this anymore. He didn't want to be anywhere near this. I want to kill someone just for the fun of it. He kind of like, yeah, I'm good.
Okay, so, that's good.
Yeah. So another friend by the name of Jason was now in the circle, if you will, to do this. So now, armed with these pistols, they went around and they scoped out an area that would be perfect for pulling off this crime. And this was an abandoned house on Scott Road. So they previously scouted this area out, picked it specifically for this. So before heading there, I mean, this was 1997, mm-hmm. They needed to make a phone call. There's no real cell phones in 1997. I'm sure there are like the beginning of cell phones, those great big, like huge ones with pullout antennas and stuff.
I think
there might be some of those, but they were certainly not a normal thing. So they needed a place to make a call and place an order for pizzas, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what they did is they'd actually gone somewhere, found pizzerias in a phone book, scribbled it on a piece of paper, right? And they had gone to a Dunkin' Donuts payphone while doing this. And using loose change scrounged from Thomas's girlfriend, Kimberly Prestige, they called Tony's Pizza, the top of that list. However, as someone on the other line answered to take their order, A familiar voice was in its place. That voice was an acquaintance of one of the perpetrators by the name of Jeremy Giordano. He was quickly recognized and they hung up the phone immediately.
Okay. They didn't want someone they knew.
Well, and potentially that could be a way of tying them to the person as well, right?
Right.
So
yeah.
They didn't want someone they knew. They began dialing several other pizza places that were on this list, attempting to find, you know, their potential victim. However, every single place they contacted refused to deliver to the specified location. Clearly, there was some suspicion in the air with a vague address and lack of contact information given. This was an abandoned house after all, so no returning phone number could be given. The instructions upon delivery were to be delivered outside of the house, like a lot of that sort of thing, right?
Okay.
So all in all, it just wasn't a situation anyone really seemed to want to deal with or be involved in. So with no options left, going through their list, they circled back to the place they originally called, Tony's Pizza. They dialed the number and the same familiar voice picked up the phone. Now they did their best to not be recognized on the call and played it cool when asked any information regarding the delivery location. At this point, everyone turned them down for this very reason. And this time they didn't want to scare their last option for a potential victim away. With that, they placed their order and managed to secure a pizza that would soon be on its way to the abandoned house at 196 Scott Road.
Okay.
Okay.
Oh, I know. Well, I'm just, yeah. Okay. It's actually interesting to me, though, that so many people turn them down, because I find that interesting, like almost surprising.
Well, I mean, if you think about 1997, it's a lot more apt for prank calls.
Okay.
So, I mean, you might be thinking, oh, it's just kids trying to get some free pizzas out of us, right. You know, whatever the case, or there's not a real address, or it's so vague, like it's not worth our time, but whatever the case may be, it just was not worth it for these pizza places to like, yeah, no thanks, right? Especially with like, you know, some younger voices on the other end, right?
Well, and you almost wonder too if any of them got some sort of gut feeling or something, you know?
I think they very well might have.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because when these orders were actually even placed, there was some suspicion over at Tony's Pizza.
Oh, really? Okay.
There was. The shop owner, Giorgio Galara, was hesitant to actually send Jeremy, who was the delivery driver, on the phone. Mm-hmm. He was hesitant to send him alone. So he decided he would actually accompany him to ensure everything went smooth and that there would be no issues. After all, as they say, there is safety in numbers, right?
Oh, that's alarming. Oh, my goodness. But okay. But I agree with that. I agree with that. They would be much harder if, you know, you had the young delivery boy and then the owner. It would be harder to get in trouble.
Yeah. Well, and to be fair, both these, the owner and the delivery boy, they were both in their 20s.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So they're both relatively young themselves.
Yeah.
I believe, don't quote me on their ages here. I think I have them written down later on. I think Jeremy was 24 and Giorgio was 28.
Okay.
I think they're about that anyways. But they definitely had suspicions and I'm sure other pizza shops did too. But they took it and they made the pizzas. And as the clock struck at 10:45 p.m. on April 19th, the two drove off and embarked on their delivery mission. Wary yet hopeful. So they pulled up to the house where both Jason and Thomas were now standing and waiting outside. Giorgio was on the passenger side of the vehicle and rolled down his window as they pulled up. He looked at the boys and he began talking to them and he told them how much money that they owed for the two pizzas they had ordered. Jason turned and asked Thomas if he had the money to pay him, to which Thomas reached into his pocket as if he was reaching for his wallet, but instead, though, pulled the gun out of his waistband. Thomas pulled out the stolen .45 caliber pistol and started firing into the car. Jason quickly followed suit and revealed his .22 caliber revolver and also began shooting into the car. Together, they unleashed a barrage of bullets upon their unsuspecting victims. A total of 7 shots tore through the quiet air that night. The car was now filled with bullet holes, and it rolled forward and came to a gentle stop on the wet, muddy grass on the side of the road. The driver, here we go, I got the ages. Jeremy, age 22, and his boss, Giorgio, age 25, now laid motionless in the car, both dead.
Holy shit. Huh. Wow. I was thinking, okay, I was like, okay, they're just going to stay in the car. I felt like that would be safer, you know, than having to get out to like go to somebody's house.
Yeah.
So I was feeling like this was going to go a different way for some reason.
But what way did you think it was going to go? What was in your head? Where were you thinking this was going to, how do you think it was going to play out?
Well, I guess when I visualized a delivery person getting killed, I just visualized them being at a doorstep or like being taken into someone's house or something, but not just in your vehicle.
Well, remember though, this is an abandoned house. It's most likely boarded up. So when you call for a pizza delivery, you're probably being like, yeah, like we'll meet you out front at the side of the road or something. Mm-hmm. And I think that's one of the reasons why suspicions were drawn during these calls, because it's like, oh, this is an abandoned house. Like it's boarded up. Like why some young kids are just calling for pizzas outside of an abandoned house? Yeah, we're not taking this call.
I guess. Because nowadays, though, with like Skip, or DoorDash or whatever they are, it's a lot more normal just to kind of do like contactless or like you go to someone's vehicle and grab it or something, right? It's more normal. But back then, I guess it definitely
That's a post-COVID thing.
Yeah. But wow. Brutal. That is so freaking sad because that's still like they're very young.
Yeah, they are.
And it was all just because of pizza. Like, or
because they're easy targets and it was a thrill kill, which we'll talk about that a little bit later. So anyways, Thomas and Jeremy now made their way towards the vehicle to ensure that their heartless task was now complete.
Just scum.
Yeah, they are. So when they managed to confirm both were dead, they dragged their victims from the vehicle and laid them on the ground. There, on the wet ground, they both laid next to the two pizzas, and that is where authorities would find their bodies.
The fuck? Why would they take them out like that?
I don't know.
Jeez.
I don't know. They did go through their pockets a bit. There was some contradicting reports I found where no money was stolen, but they did go through their pockets. And later on, a little bit of a spoiler alert, but later on, a wallet was found in their possession. So there definitely was some stolen, but some might have been left behind, I guess. Regardless, though, after the murder, the two adrenaline-fueled killers at this point sprinted away from the scene and headed towards Thomas's vehicle. Once at the car, Thomas turned to Jason and said in an excited tone, "I can't believe we did this." To which Jason responded, "I love you, man." And they shared a hug before jumping into his vehicle and fleeing. That to me is so fucking disgusting.
That's just nasty.
It's so fucking
like
gross.
What the shit? They literally just took two innocent people's lives. That yeah. are just trying to like do their job and make a paycheck.
Yeah.
And they're,
I love you, man. After doing that,
you're just like pumped about it. Okay. Like that's fucked.
Want to know something even worse? This is going to make some people's blood fucking really boil. On the way to Thomas's house, they then made a quick pit stop out front of a church where they got out of the car, made a sign of the cross before hopping back into the car and proceeding home.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Yeah.
Wow, these people are just winners, eh?
Like, what kind of self-righteous fucking piece of shit scum do you, like... Who does that?
Yeah.
You're excited about murder. You fucking revel in it by being like, I love you, man. Like this brought you fucking closer. Mm-hmm. And then you go to a fucking church and then you like praise the Lord sort of situation.
And they knew this one guy too.
They did know the one
guy. Which is so, I mean, not that it makes it any better, but gosh. Yeah.
No, Thomas was an acquaintance of Jeremy. They kind of knew each other a little bit. I don't think they were like friends really per se, but they knew each other. And Thomas actually had allegedly a lot of memories from Tony's Pizza growing up, ordering pizza there with like his family and stuff. Yeah.
Hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, gosh, I hope that these people get what's coming to them because that is, it's just so sad. And especially he would know what he was taking away in the sense, like he would know what, or the family that one guy had.
Yeah.
Right. And
100%. Oh, and even to make it worse though, too, like Giorgio, he used to work at Tony's Pizza and he actually saved up to buy the owner out for him to own the shop. So it was like a big accomplishment. I think he only owned the shop for a year or something like that, a year or two.
Really?
Yeah. So like, he was like, this was a proud thing for him. It was like his shop, like,
well, and then he was obviously a super awesome employer too, that yeah. He was like, okay, this maybe is a bit sketch. Like, I'll just come with you and it will be fine.
Yeah, 100%.
Oh, you just broke my heart.
I'm sorry.
Even more.
Sorry.
Brutal.
Well, let's carry on then. Sorry. Sorry for breaking your heart. Let's keep going with the story. So once they sped away from the church and then they arrived at Thomas's home, Thomas then put the guns and both, and some of their bloody clothes actually, in a bag and placed it under a pane of glass outside of his house. To them, they had gotten away with the perfect crime.
Yeah,
and they were reveling in it all. However, little did they know, investigators would quickly, and I mean very, very fucking quickly, be on their tail. On Sunday, April 20th, news of the previous night's murder was making its way through media and through word of mouth. There was whispers of the horror and disbelief going far and wide. Christine Slater, a friend of Thomas's, picked up the phone and dialed police. She informed them that just the day before the murders had occurred, her friend Thomas Koskovich had mentioned to her that he wanted to kill a pizza delivery person.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. She, of course, didn't take him seriously at that, you know, and she thought nothing more than just a conversation then. But now she believes that he may have been serious and followed through with his words.
Okay, well, good for her, because it's understandable that, I mean,
to not take someone seriously. Yeah, I get it.
You're like, what the heck? Like, what's wrong with you kind of thing? But then when she heard about it, to actually contact the police right away, that is good.
Yeah. And I mean, like, honestly, like, it's easy to say in hindsight, oh, she should have called someone when he said that initially. But on a daily basis, people are like, oh, fuck my life. Oh, I want to kill myself. Oh, my God, if this person says one more thing, I'm going to go fucking kill them. Like, that's just normal
talk. People are really dramatic at times, right?
Yes, very dramatic at times. And it's just normal to hear that sort of shit in this day and age. So I cannot blame her for just thinking, oh, yeah, sure. Oh, like maybe his last fucking pizza was late. And he's like, I want to fucking kill that pizza delivery guy now. Mm-hmm. Like, sure, yeah, buddy.
Because honestly, in your mind, you'd probably think, oh, man, like, he need to go on some medication or something. Like, is he okay?
Yeah.
Right? But you're not going to think that he's going to actually follow through on that.
100%. So after that call was made, a vigilant resident of Scott Road also stepped forward and called police the very same day.
Good.
They described a suspicious vehicle that they had seen driving up and down the road the day prior. This vehicle and the description just so happened to match Thomas's car. Clearly, their perfect crime was not so perfect after all, but instead riddled with flaws and witnesses.
Awesome. I love observant people like that.
I agree.
So good.
Yeah. Now, the meticulous investigation continued and only uncovered more from there. One of the first places that they started their investigation was tracing the call that came in to order the pizza from Tony's Pizza. They managed to trace it back to the very same payphone at Dunkin' Donuts where the call was made. And from there, they pulled surveillance footage and captured both Thomas and Jason looking through the phone book and their little list and making the calls. Police had more than enough evidence at this point to move in for an arrest. And on April 21st, maybe 48 hours later, that's exactly what happened. An arrest was made. They also executed a search warrant on Thomas's home and found firearms, bloodstained clothes in a gym bag, and Giorgio Galara's wallet, who is one of the victims. The wallet that I mentioned was found.
And they literally thought that they were just like done and, you know, we did a good job here.
Yeah. Again, do you think he's very smart?
No.
Yeah, I don't think so.
I think that he is the opposite of that.
Agreed.
A complete dumbass.
I agree.
Is that the opposite? I think it needs to be more harsh.
So, okay, question. Sorry, I'm totally digressing on something that's not even related to this podcast, but I just have a question. Dumbass.
Okay.
Smartass. Don't they kind of mean the same thing?
Dumbass and smartass? No, I would say dumbass is worse.
I mean, like, they don't mean the same thing, but it's like...
Because smartass, I kind of think, like, it's someone's a bit cheeky.
Well, yeah, I agree.
But dumbass, I wouldn't think.
But they're not opposites. Like, dumb and smart are opposites.
Oh, okay. I see where you're going.
Smartass and dumbass should be opposites, but they're not.
They're not.
They almost mean the same thing.
Well, that's just like the English language is kind of fucked.
Yeah.
There's so many things, so many words and stuff that mean the same thing that it's just
confusing. I agree. Anyways, that popped in my head. I digress. Let's get back to this.
Holy.
So Thomas quickly confessed to the incident when they got arrested. And while Jason did too, he claimed that he didn't actually shoot the victims. Now, he said he wanted to prove he, quote, was a friend of Thomas's and that he, quote, didn't want to kill anybody. So while firing, he opted to shoot at the dashboard inside the vehicle instead of the passengers.
I don't know if that makes him really any better.
Which forensics would later prove to be a lie.
Ugh.
As it was proven that Jeremy, his life was extinguished by a fatal bullet from Thomas's gun. And Giorgio was killed from a single bullet from Jason's gun.
Oh my goodness, to lie about that is just like you're caught.
Yeah.
At least have a little bit of decency to just be like, yeah, I'm a piece of shit.
I agree. Now, Jason at the time was only 17 years old when the murders took place. And as such, he was placed in the county's juvenile detention center after his arrest. While behind bars, you just like facepalmed. Why?
Well, sorry, I'm actually thinking. Well, first of all, 17 is so young. But Thomas was kind of the planner, the organizer. And Jason, sorry, is the one that wanted to be his friend.
Yes. Now, I don't know if Thomas was like the organizer, the planner. It was certainly his idea.
Though. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, but he was the one that was chatting with that other dude that correct. Was like, no.
Yes.
He was the one that was part of the robbery.
Correct. Thomas is the one that went in the store, robbed everything, had the guns to begin with. The other friend, Michael, kind of dipped. And then Jason, who was kind of involved a little bit too, then kind of like stepped up and was the next to do the thing.
Yeah. It's too bad Michael didn't say anything, hey, but.
Yeah, I agree. Anyways, Jason was only 17. He was put in juvenile detention center after his arrest. And while behind bars, Jason confided in others who were also incarcerated alongside him. And he allegedly said that he never thought he and Thomas would actually go through with their plans. But as to why he did it, he just said, quote, wanted to see what it was like to kill somebody.
It also seems a little bit like a peer pressure thing too, in a way.
I think when it occurred, because Jason turned to Thomas and asked him if he had money to pay for the pizzas. I think if Thomas pulled out money, then they would have bought pizzas and that would have been that.
Mm-hmm.
But Thomas pulled out a gun, so Jason did too.
Yeah, like he was following him.
He was following him, but he was just as responsible. And if you get, He also had the curiosity. He also did it. He just needed someone to jump off the bridge first. So he jumped after.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's all it was. He just needed someone to do it first so he could follow.
Ugh.
So following his admissions of a desire to indulge in the thrill of taking a life, the Sussex County prosecutors coined the term thrill kill, which was then picked up by news organizations around the world. So as far as I can tell, I mean, I didn't dive too much into researching on this term. As far as I could tell, though, this term was birthed with this case. Yes.
Thrill kill.
Yeah.
That's so disturbing. A term that should never, never be.
Oh, 100% agree. Yeah. Now, from the bustling streets of New York City to the shores of Asia, the tales of the pizza murders found its way all around the world. Dolores Blackburn, presiding over the trials of Thomas, Koskovich and Jason Vreeland, witnessed firsthand the spectacle that ensued. The usual proceedings of the courthouse transformed into a frenzied spectacle as media outlets clamored for a glimpse at the cold-blooded boys who pulled the trigger on the innocent pizza delivery men for such a mundane and honestly, in my opinion, pathetic reason. News trucks lined the streets, their satellite dishes, because yes, this is still the 90s, poised to broadcast every single grim detail to an eager audience as the case unfolded in the courtroom. The term media circus was often used to describe what it was like, and rightfully so. Regardless, though, as the world looked on, in a horrified fashion, the wheels of justice continued to turn. Thomas faced a trial that showcased a litany of damning evidence, and on April 23rd, 1999, the gavel fell. He was found guilty for the heinous crimes of 2 counts of murder and 1 count of robbery. On May 7th, 1999, just barely a couple weeks later, Thomas was dealt the death sentence, but the state Supreme Court intervened, overturning the sentence in 2001. A subsequent jury, unable to reach a unanimous verdict regarding the death penalty, instead delivered a sentence of life in prison in 2002. Meanwhile, Jason Vreeland faced his own reckoning before the eyes of the law. He was convicted on December 22, 1999, of purposeful or knowing murder of Galara, felony murder of Galara, aggravated manslaughter, first-degree robbery, second-degree burglary, conspiracy, possession of a firearm for an unlawful purpose, and possession of a firearm without a permit. Jason's fate was sealed with a somber pronouncement of life in prison, a fate he received due to his status as a minor at the time of his crimes. So they most likely would have sought the death penalty if it weren't for his age.
Because he was 17 or whatever.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they didn't seek that because of his age. But, instead, he received life in prison on February 25th, 2000. Now, attorney Salito offered an interesting statement to the court regarding the sentencing that I want to touch on, too. I use the word interesting very heavily on this. So that attorney said, quote, "No disrespect to the victims, and I don't want to put everyone on equal footing, and I'm not trying to do that. But as far as my client is concerned, through his own hand, he ended his own life that day at such a young age of 17. I'm sorry. Yes, you're disrespecting the victims. Yes, you're trying to put everyone on equal footing, and you are trying to do just that because your client ended his own life and another."
Mm-hmm. That's interesting.
Yes.
Like you said, that's how you used to describe it. Like, what the actual shit? There's no comparison whatsoever.
Yeah, that's like when someone says, "I'm not racist, but I'm pretty sure you're about to say something racist."
Yes.
But, like,
yes, like, what you the are. Fuck? Yeah, or no offense. But
yeah, I'm okay. Something offensive is about to come out of your fucking mouth. Yeah, I'm about
to offend you, but like, no offense.
Yeah, if I say that, that means I am not implicated now. I'm just going to say the thing and it should be okay. No.
Yeah, because the victims, they were literally just doing their job. They had no idea what was about to happen to them.
Yeah.
They had no choice in that matter whatsoever, and they would never have chosen that.
Yeah.
And this guy fucking chose to do that.
Yeah.
And now he has to face the consequences of his fucking actions.
Exactly. And no, he didn't end his own life because he's still fucking living.
Mm-hmm.
Guess what? Those two drivers in the car, they're fucking dead because of him. Mm-hmm. He ended someone else's life.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. This attorney, piece of shit, in my opinion.
I know. Sometimes we've talked about that before, the attorneys. Like, I know you know, everyone's, what's the saying? Everyone is, what's the saying? Like, you're allowed to be represented. Or you have
the right to be represented. Yeah.
Yeah. But, gosh, to have to represent someone that's so shitty, I feel like it'd be very hard to do.
Yeah.
Very hard. Like a murderer to represent them?
I know.
I feel like I'd be like, yeah, to send them to jail.
Like, in all honesty, I can make that sentence, like, I could off the cuff fucking make that sentence way better and way more respectful. Here, my client did heinous things that day. My client took the life of someone else. Are they remorseful? Yes, I guarantee it. If they could take those actions back, I know they would. And from here on out, they will be living every moment paying that retribution back. Because now you're dedicating.
You should be a lawyer.
Maybe I should. Because now you're putting it in terms that, yes, they did something wrong. They're sorry. And they're going to be living every day thinking about that and paying towards that. I'm sorry. This attorney just
pissed you off. Clearly.
Really pissed me off.
Yeah.
Anyways, that asshole aside. Today, both Jason Vreeland and Thomas Kaskovich find themselves behind bars within the confines of New Jersey's state prison in Trenton. Their freedom has been stripped away, their futures filled with incarceration. They both, however, are eligible for parole.
Well, yeah, that's what I was waiting for.
Jason will be eligible on October 18th, 2044, and Thomas will have his turn October 20th, 2072.
Really?
Yes.
How? That's so long. Like, that's like, those are actually like good sentences then.
Yeah.
Because I thought that you were going to be like right around now or next year or something.
Nope.
Okay.
They are up. They do have parole, potential parole, but they're definitely good sentences because they were sentenced in 2020 and 2021. So it's like 2001 and 2000. So yeah, it's like 40 and like 44 years and 71 years or something like that.
Huh. Okay. That's good.
Yeah. So that is the case of the pizza killers, the pizza murders, the baby face pizza killers, however you want to put it. That is that.
Hate
case.
The baby face pizza killers. That name sucks.
It does. But I mean, it's fitting because of their age, though.
I guess. Yeah.
And if you look at photos of them, they just look like kids, man. It's ridiculous. I don't know why, but lately I'm on this like string of young people committing crimes.
Because it's just so interesting to me. Like, do they realize the consequences? Because that just seems like such a ridiculous, effed up reason. Because I wanted to see what it was like. Like, that doesn't make any sense.
I think they are 100% aware of the consequences. I just think that they're naive enough to think they're going to get away with it. I literally think that, and this whole like they thought they were getting away with the perfect crime. That's not anything I read. That's my opinion put in this case, because I do think that they were thinking they were getting away with it scot-free. And it was just an experience they did together and brought them closer. And they're going to go live on their lives just with this secret.
Of killing people.
Yeah.
How could you just go on with your life?
Clearly that's what they were about to do. Jeez. They embraced each other, said I love you, man, and went and did like the Father, Son, Holy Spirit cross outside a church.
Yeah, that, I mean, they were just probably like not like high but high on life from what they just
adrenaline,
did.
Adrenaline, yeah.
Ugh, that is just so disturbing.
Yeah.
I wonder, and I'm kind of curious if things after this happened, if anything changed in regards to delivery people. You know, and what they, their protocols on for safety and stuff.
I don't think so. Because I mean, like you could literally just call a person to your door now, like right now, a pizza delivery driver will drive up to your door.
Okay. And this just made me think to like Uber drivers and stuff, right? Because you're always taught like, don't get into strangers' cars. And now you literally just use a fucking app.
Well, your parents would tell you, yeah, don't talk to people on the internet. Don't get in a stranger's car. Yeah. We married the two. Now we contact a stranger on the internet and get in their car.
Oh boy. Yeah.
Yeah.
Man. I'm going to also say I don't really feel like pizza. I'd rather feel like a donut.
A donut? Because of the Dunkin' Donuts.
Yeah,
fair enough. Well, anyways, that was the case. Hopefully you guys liked it. If you want to check out our links, they're all in the description of this podcast. We got YouTube channels, two of them, in fact, which we're a little bit behind on, but we are going to get caught up here soon. We got Patreon, where you can check out all that extra behind the scenes good stuff, extra episodes, you name it. We have Facebook, Instagram, all of it. It's all there. Go check it out. If you want to give us a rating, we'd really appreciate that. It helps the show grow quite a bit. So yeah, go do that. And we appreciate you.
Mm-hmm. We sure do. This was a brutal one.
Yeah.
It's going to be on my mind for a while.
It was an interesting one. I think, anyone out there in the service industry where you're dealing with the public like this, going to someone's house, meeting individuals somewhere, realtors, pizza delivery drivers, photographers, whatever the case be, stay safe.
Mm-hmm.
At the very least, make sure you know someone knows where you are.
Yeah. I think that's a big one for sure.
Yeah. So.
Okay, well, until next week.
Until next week.
Stay wicked.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.